welcome to Star Wars Sleepover, a laid-back exploration of the captivating and sometimes ridiculous galaxy far, far away. I'm Europa Tokani, and as always, I'm here with my co-host.
Hi, I'm Loya Rowan, and today we're leaning heavily into the ridiculous component and focusing on some Star Wars crossovers and parodies. Darth Vader meets red and yellow M&Ms, Luke stars in the Muppets, C-3PO and R2-D2 visit Sesame Street. We're talking about it all. Let's do this.
It's time now for our Cantina Corner segment. Every episode, Loya and I each choose a Star Wars themed cocktail to enjoy during our sleepover. And actually, I have to confess that mine this episode is not really a Star Wars themed cocktail. I tried looking up Muppet themed cocktails, and apparently is a shooter cocktail called the Muppet, I guess, but it's supposedly a shot that has its origin in Mexico, and it's green. So it's literally just tequila and lemon lime beverage, as this recipe says, so like Sprite or 7-Up. And the directions are: place the tequila in a shot glass, top with the soda. To drink, hold glass with one hand, cover with napkin in your other hand, tap glass on the table, and drink up. I was not going to do this shot, so I did not choose this cocktail. And then I found this recipe for the Leapfrog Highball. And again, I don't even know if this is like strictly a Muppets themed recipe. It's from
drinkkings.com.
And the description of the drink says, Kermit the Frog is a puppet that was introduced by Jim Henson on a 1955 television show, Sam and Friends. The prototype for Kermit was made from an old coat that belonged to Henson's mother and two halves of a ping pong ball that were used to create Kermit's eyes. The character is most known for his appearances with the Muppets and on the children's program Sesame Street. So this goes with our theme, although I don't really know like what this has to do with Kermit specifically. So it is gin, lemon juice, and ginger ale. So pretty simple, but I think it's going to be nice and refreshing. So I'm going to go ahead and try it.
I didn't realize Kermit was had his first appearance in 1955. That's crazy.
So it's very good. I don't taste the ginger ale so much, which is interesting, because finally, on your recommendation, Loya, I did get Q ginger ale. So I was excited to use it, but I feel like it's not really that prominent in this drink.
Oh, that's sad. I like the bite from the cayenne pepper and the ginger ale.
It is good, though. It's kind of like lemonade-esque, which I enjoy.
I could see that. Like the ginger ale and lemon, that would definitely be very evocative of that.
All right. What did you choose for this episode, Loya?
So I chose something that like doesn't have anything to do with our topic, as usual. It is a Cloud City Aviation by Maine Spirits. It appears to be just kind of like a normal aviation. And it's interesting because on the website, it has make it yourself and it lists ingredients and like goes through the gin, the violet liqueur, the fresh lemon juice, and the one maraschino cherry. And then the directions are just a repeat of the ingredients, but slightly different. So the directions say gin, maraschino liqueur, violet liqueur, fresh lemon juice, and maraschino cherry for garnish. So I just picked the second one because I deliberately purchased maraschino liqueur to like use in this. So we'll see how this tastes. It's very pretty. I totally forgot the maraschino cherry. And there were, again, going back to like our first episode where I talked about like martini glasses not being suitable for the podcast because like, I don't know, I just feel like I'm going to knock them over when I'm like gesturing. So it is in a normal glass. I should probably start posting pictures on our Instagram account again, because, like, I haven't.
You should.
Yeah, I know. I mean, can I, like, do them all at once? Like, I think I'm three behind.
Just, like, catch up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'll wait until you catch up, and then I'll post mine from this episode, and then we can be caught up in time for the release of this episode.
Perfect. I love that idea. That is different. It tastes with the maraschino liqueur. I don't know how often that is in aviation. It's good, but I'm glad I measured it out, because, like, I could totally see me, if I'm eyeballing it, just pouring way too much, and I'm going to sip this for sure.
I do really like any floral liqueur, so I feel like I would like that because of the violet liqueur, which I do also have from previous cocktails that I've made. I need to, like, find a way to use some of the stuff that I've accumulated since doing this podcast, because I have a very full liquor cabinet, and I never
just
make cocktails randomly. Like, if I have a drink, usually it's wine, but I really should make more of an effort with cocktails.
It feels like, yeah, I mean, if I'm gonna make a mixed drink, it's gonna be something simple, like whiskey ginger. I'm not gonna sit there and be like, oh, let me bring out my violet liqueur. But I associate you so strongly with violet liqueur. It's like, it is. I think because we went to that one restaurant when you came over, and, like, you got that very floral drink, and you talked about how much you enjoyed it. And so you're the only person I know who, like, really likes floral cocktails.
Well, hopefully other people do, and this is a good seg into the Mastroid segment.
All right. It is now time for the Mouse-a-Droid segment, where we discuss other ways we've been interacting with the Star Wars universe and any housekeeping items we might have. So, to start.
So, I have some quick news, I guess. We have talked previously on the podcast about the zine called Into a Larger World. I am a subscriber. It's a Star Wars zine that covers pretty much everything in the Star Wars galaxy, and I love it. I am always excited to see it in my mailbox every month, and excited to get the May issue because we are going to have an essay in it. So we got a little shout out in the podcast issue of the zine that came out back in March, which was very cool and exciting. And Kara, who creates the zine, had asked if we wanted to do an essay, and also as part of our contribution include a cocktail and a mocktail recipe that went with the theme. And so we have done that. I don't want to reveal too much about the details and the topic, but if you're a subscriber, you will see it. If you're not a subscriber, definitely check it out at Into a Larger World by Kara with a K on Instagram. And if you become a subscriber, you will get all the back issues. So that is something to look forward to as well if you decide to do that. But we actually created Star Wars scene cocktails own for the first time. So it was like, it was a big deal for us. And we would love for you to check it out and make them and hopefully enjoy them. And spoiler, mine is very floral. So if you like floral drinks, check it out. If you hate floral drinks, then you can make Loya's mocktail that she created that I think everyone will enjoy.
Yeah. Also, unsurprisingly for this season, it involves ice cream. So, well, sure bet. All right. So my housekeeping item or follow-up is I rewatched Rogue One with Darth Brooks because he hadn't seen it, and I was getting really tired of not spoiling things when we did battles in Battlefronts, because some of the planets are set, like Scarif, for instance. Every single time I'm on Scarif, I'm like, oh, Scarif, da-da-da-da. I'm like, oh, wait, I can't spoil Rogue One. Now I don't have to worry about that. And I just wanted to say that watching it again, I was better able to understand things. Like, I do feel like Jin's journey makes more sense to me after watching it a second time. However, tonally, it is still all over the place. It's and I feel very vindicated because Darth Brooks was also, like, on the same page with that. And we spent a lot of time pretty much in a repeat of the conversation you and I had about Rogue One. So, yeah.
What were his overall thoughts? Did he like it?
He thought it was okay. Yeah. He spent some time talking about how... I mean, we tend to, like, a lot of our Star Wars conversations end up being, like, they didn't have a plan when they started making it. I'm just like, well, you need to read the comics. You need to, like, watch the TV shows. There's a plan, man. There's a plan. But, yeah, so I think it ended up on that note, which, again, is not uncommon. He didn't have any, like, other, nothing really stood out in terms of his reaction otherwise. And then, speaking of Battlefront, I swear this is the last time because I know, like, it's just me, like, it's amazing. But I played as Darth Maul, and it was actually pretty good. So now I have two instances where I don't, like, hate Darth Maul on his face. We're going to talk about commercials, which I think, I don't know if I have mentioned this on the pod, where my family is very into commercials, where I would say more often than not, like maybe every other time, every three times, whenever I see them or talk to them, since I haven't actually been seeing them, they'll ask me if I've seen a commercial, and I haven't. No, I don't watch TV. If it's on YouTube or, you know, it's in the middle of a football game, sure, maybe, but otherwise, no. So this is kind of weird to be discussing commercials, like, willingly and not just, like, sitting there and listening to my parents talk about this commercial that they saw that they thought was so funny. So, yeah, we're going to talk about Star Wars in commercials.
I never see commercials anymore, so I would say the majority, if not all of the commercials that we're going to talk about, I had not seen.
Oh, really?
Before we were watching them for this episode. And I basically just never see commercials anymore because everything I watch is on a streaming service, which that usually doesn't have commercials. So, like, I am totally out of the loop and commercials are pretty much a foreign concept to me at this point.
Yeah. So some of these, like, I definitely remembered because they came out during football season. like the Christmas ones especially. I was like, oh yeah, I remember seeing that in the middle of like a game.
That makes sense, but I also do not watch football. And in fact, we cannot get like over the air TV where I live. So it's been a whole production for my husband to be able to watch any sports. Like, we have to do it through some kind of streaming service, so we can't just do it over the air. And he also is, like, not really a sports fan. Like, he would deny that if he were here, but he pretty much just watches, like, specifically what he's interested in. He's not super clued into it. Like, he's definitely, like, a bandwagon fan. So
that's so interesting.
It's not like we are sitting down every Sunday and whatever day is during football season, like watching a game and having it be an event. Like,
although not experiencing the commercials is totally fine. Often we often meet them at this point because it's too much.
We'll talk about this as we go on, but like I feel like that wasn't always the case. Like I had a different relationship with commercials other parts of my life, so
yeah. Okay, so let's start with in no particular order. Like as I organize this outline, I'm just like whatever, we'll talk about this one first. It is the 2005 M&M's commercial, which we will link to on our website, where Darth Vader, you hear the Imperial March, which is kind of common in commercials that feature Star Wars, heavily used. You hear the Imperial March, Darth Vader and Stormtroopers appear, and you see red and yellow M&Ms. And I had to look this up because I was like, are they just called red and yellow M&Ms? Apparently, yes. I thought they had, like, backstories and names, but no. They're just known by their colors. And what do they say? Red M&M says, these dark chocolate M&Ms are a good idea, but we've decided not to join the dark side. Darth Vader immediately force chokes him. And then yellow M&M says, we'll start Monday. It's a nice short commercial. I appreciate the connection between dark chocolate and the dark side of the Force. That was fine. Clever.
I feel like I potentially have seen that commercial before. Like, I vaguely remember it.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't like M&M's commercials for the most part. Like, I find them annoying. Except for the Christmas M&M's commercial that has been on TV. And, like, this one I do see sometimes because of, like, whatever we're watching around the holiday season. I do still manage to see this. The M&M's commercial where they're... I don't even know, like, what the premise of this commercial is now that I'm talking about it. They're in someone's house on Christmas Eve, and I don't know what they're doing. Like, the red and yellow M&M.
Yeah.
And then Santa comes in, and they're like, you do exist. And then Santa sees them, and he's like, they do exist, and passes out. And then they're just like, Merry Christmas from M&M's or whatever. Like, that commercial has been on for, like, the past 25 years.
Has it really? I know exactly. Like, I've seen that commercial too. Wow.
Yeah. It's been on forever. But, like, here's where I'm like, I kind of have a strange relationship with commercials, or at least ones that are nostalgic to me from my childhood, because, like, I enjoy seeing that commercial. I see that commercial. I'm like, oh, it's Christmas time. Like, this commercial lets me know that it's Christmas time. So I feel kind of weird about that, but there have also been times where I've just, like, sat and watched compilations of commercials from the 90s on YouTube, and I'm just like, oh my god, this gives me, like, such nice, warm feelings. Aww. So I think I watched too much TV as a child or something, but yeah, there definitely are, like, nostalgic commercials that make me happy, and that's one of them.
I get that, because there was that one... I watch it all the time. It's actually more recent than my childhood, though. It's, I forget what it was. It was an Audi commercial from, like, a Super Bowl from, like, 5 to 7 years ago. And it's featuring, like, they're bringing out a swanky mansion. And all these, like, older people are behind bars. And they're running around and they're like, release the hounds. And there's these Afghan hounds that, like, run after them, and, like, they escape. And then they're like, hit him with the Kenny G. And it's just Kenny G being like, durr, durr, durr. And, like, they break in, they break out. And, like, he's like, oh, I almost forgot my stuffed dodo. And so then they get out of the mansion. There's a car. And the guy goes, no, not that car. And he's like, don't like, nonsense. My father drove one, which I quote all the time from this commercial. And so he gets in the car, which then leads him right back to the prison. And the other guy leaps into an audience, just like, not your father's luxury vehicle or something or other. I will link to this because I love this commercial. But yeah,
interesting.
Something about that. It's like the hit him with the Kenny G. It was just like, it was such a clever commercial, and I love it. So yeah,
I don't have any recent commercials that I feel strongly about. It's like all the seasonal candy ones, I guess. Like, it's that M&M's commercial, it's the Hershey's Kisses commercial, the Christmas one where they're like playing We Wish You a Merry Christmas, and the Cadbury egg one with the bunny.
I don't think I've seen the Cadbury egg one with the bunny. We should link to, you should send me that
one. It's also super old. Like, they just play them every year, but this commercial has been in existence for, like, decades.
Which is pretty impressive, because, I mean, like, the upfront costs of the commercial is obviously, like, long gone, and then they hit you with the nostalgia, too, to, like, get you to buy the product. It's clever. It's clever.
All right. That was definitely a tangent, but, yeah, I guess I've said what I was going to say about the M&M's commercial. This commercial is fine. I do think it was clever to do the dark chocolate and the dark side of the Force, and it was also pre-Revenge of the Sith, so it was on theme with Anakin turning to the dark side and becoming Darth Vader. But I generally don't like M&M commercials. I generally don't like M&Ms, so it's not really for me.
Yeah. It was actually funny. One of my old coworkers would bring in M&Ms, and then like I would just like pound through them. So he brought me a bag. I think I was just like a pet in the office because like they would just bring me stuff, and I'd be like, "Oh my god, M&Ms!" I was just like, "Eat." So he brought me crispy mint M&Ms, and they were amazing. And so I got him a bag when I left, and he got me a bag, so it was just like a complete wash. But those M&Ms, so good, so good.
I don't mind peanut M&Ms. I like crispy M&Ms. I like some of like the different flavored or like different filled M&Ms, but I do not like plain regular M&Ms at all.
Yeah, at this point, those are dead to me. Just dead to me. The other ones are the way to go. There was one brownie fudge that I had last year that was really good.
That sounds like too much for me. I think the crispy M&Ms are like the ideal M&Ms for me because they're not like overly chocolatey.
Yeah. God, now all I want is M&Ms. All right. These commercials are too effective. The next one we're going to talk about, which actually I will be immune to because I do not drink Pepsi.
Yeah, but it's I hate Pepsi.
Yeah, I don't drink cola in general.
Well, that's not true. So I do love Diet Coke, which I know is terrible. Like, it is straight up chemicals, and it tastes like chemicals. Yeah, I love it.
I've never asked for a Diet Pepsi in my life, or a Pepsi. I used to, my mom had this thing about, like, not giving me caffeinated beverages when I was younger. And so I would be allowed to drink one Coke a month in middle school. And I was like, it was a big deal.
I feel like this contributed to your own feelings about caffeine.
Totally.
I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast, but when we were in college, Loya like was adamant that she could not consume caffeine, or else she would just like be off the wall. Like,
so in my defense, the first time I drank coffee, like a full cup of coffee, I was off the wall.
Okay, that's understandable, though, because you didn't drink coffee. So, like, that's understandable. But I remember times when, like, I had tea in my
room. I was crazy.
And I would be like, do you want some tea? And you'd be like, does this have caffeine? And I'm like, it's green tea. And you're like, but does it have caffeine? Like, I mean, some, I don't know.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, Pepsi.
So, again, the Imperial March plays. They're in a big theater. There's a kid drinking a Pepsi and just, like, doing that, like, straw-sucking sound. But, like, I hate this kid.
I also need to point out that they're in, like, a very elaborate old-school theater. Like, theaters that used to exist in, like, the 1930s. I don't know who goes to a theater that looks like that, especially this, like, 8-year-old child, but it's very fancy.
I didn't even notice that, but as you said that, I was like, yeah, wait, they have an usher. Why do they have an usher? I don't know. So Darth Vader gets annoyed that he's, like, sucking down this Pepsi, like, starts to come out through the screen, and then the usher says, pick on someone your own size or something, I don't know, and then, like, uses his light to, like, fight Darth Vader, and, like, the lightsaber swoops across the crowd and, like, cuts off a bunch of people's hair, which I was just unimpressed by.
This is gonna be, again, off topic, but I feel like I just need to share this. So I was just thinking about how I'm surprised that I wasn't, like, actually scared of this commercial when it came out, because, well, I guess I was maybe old enough not to be, because I was 9. And this... Was I 9? Yes, 9. And this would have been around when I saw Star Wars for the first time. Mm-hmm. But I just was thinking back to when I had surgery. When I was, like, 6, I think I was just sick. and I had to take, like, NyQuil.
Oh.
And now that I say that, I don't know. It was some kind of, like, cold medication that made me sleep.
Yeah.
To this day, though, if I take NyQuil, I will have nightmares.
Yeah, NyQuil dreams. They're actually a thing. Yes.
Good to know. Oh, but
yeah,
I had what was essentially a NyQuil dream where I was on a train and, like, there was something with, like, the third rail, and it was electrified, and you had to not touch the third rail, but the whole dream was just me, like, coming very close to touching it. It was very stressful. And then I remember we, like, went by a billboard, and this is actually relevant to this episode, because it was a billboard that had Big Bird on it, and Big Bird, like, came to life, and was just, like, looming menacingly from the billboard, and it was very scary to me in my dream.
Yeah. I one of the takeaways I have from watching Sesame Street as an adult is Big Bird is kind of
yeah, I mean, like, did that change between the 80s in the episodes that we were watching for this podcast and, like, when we were children watching it? Because I don't, like, Big Bird doesn't seem like I remember.
Yeah, I maybe question how much like Sesame Street I actually watched, because I don't remember
Big Bird the Sesame Street
that much at all.
I even went to Sesame Street Live.
Oh, wow. I would be curious if it's changed for you. Maybe there is, like, some sort of, like, subtle change in personality. I know Cookie Monster, as we'll talk about, has undergone changes since he first appeared.
Is Oscar the Grouch still on Sesame Street, or did they do away with him?
I don't know. I think, doesn't HBO own Sesame Street now?
They do now, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't watch it. not that even if I had HBO Max, I would, like, be hunted down Sesame Street, but I don't know. Like, it'd be interesting to find out.
I think kids still watch it, because my niece watches it.
Yeah. So in this Pepsi commercial, I wrote that I was surprised that Darth Vader didn't force choke that kid, but I guess that'd be, like, even worse.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think you can show that in a Pepsi commercial.
Mm-hmm. And then, watching this one on YouTube led me to another commercial in 1999 with Jake Lloyd. And I do feel like I saw this as a kid, possibly.
I definitely did not see this.
Yes. It was just kind of like this, like, passing. It was the alien, right? The alien, like, arrived in the theater because they wanted to see The Phantom Menace, and it just happened to land next to Jake Lloyd, which is why Jake Lloyd is sitting there watching his own performance. I don't know, but in the commercial, that's what happened. So, yeah.
It's terrible, terrible. It is terrible. CGI. Like, what was that commercial they always used to be on for, like, that ringtone with the frog? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
I don't know.
It was called, like, Crazy Frog? Maybe. It was, like, a early 2000s thing, I think. But that's what the CGI reminded me of, if anyone knows what I'm talking about.
It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. I mean, not that the CGI has necessarily held up from the movies themselves, but this True. Is definitely, but, like, on, like, a lower budget.
Yeah, lower tier than even that.
Exactly. And then I found a compilation of Star Wars commercials that I shared in our outline. And I guess we can just go through these kind of systematically and, like, throw our thoughts out there. So it starts with it's a Verizon commercial with a family that has, like, very elaborate Star Wars costumes. And so the dad is dressed as Jabba the Hutt, and he's got a baby who's dressed as Princess Leia in a bikini around his,
so,
like...
you had said you liked these, and some of them were cool, but I saw the dad's costume, and I was like, not sure about that.
I know. Like, on one hand, it's very, you know, creative. On the other hand, like, it's a baby in a bikini costume, which is just kind of like, But the mom's Chewbacca. One of the kids is in an X-Wing, I think. Mm-hmm. Another one's in Moon, and then the Pug is Darth Vader, which is what I love. Because, like, yes, obviously, the Pug has to be Darth Vader. So that one I've definitely seen also because of football. You know, Halloween, the season has started. And then the next one that came up was a Toys R Us one. Moment of silence for Toys R Us. And then
I thought they were back.
Are they back?
I thought they were.
Ours, the one locally, is no longer where it was. I don't know if there's one.
I don't think all of them opened back up, but I thought that they were at least having some stores.
Nice bounce back. Good job. Good job, corporation.
Yeah. As of January 31st, Toys R Us website remains operational in more than 700 stores. Oh, outside of the United States are still open?
What?
Toys R Us chain. Toys R Us. Well, I said that totally wrong. You get it. Toys R Us is returning to the U.S. retail landscape, possibly before the 2021 holiday season. And that's from March 17th of this year.
Wow. Wow. Then I don't have to say RIP.
I guess not.
Live long and prosper, I guess. This one was so sad to me because basically, like, the dad is super into Star Wars, and so she's crying, or he's trying to comfort her in, like, a Yoda voice, and she starts crying, and the mom has to, like, come in, and, like, it just, yeah, it's
she's,
everything.
She's, like, yelling at him, too. Yeah. She's just like, oh, God.
I know, and I was just like, oh, this poor man, he's got no support, and, like, she's dressed up as Chewbacca for Halloween, and he's, like, carefully painting her nose, and he's like, you look wonderful, and she's like, Mom! And then he's watching Star Wars, and he's like, oh, you want to come watch Star Wars? And she says, and walks off. But then they go to Toys R Us, and he's geeking out over the toys. And then he realizes that he doesn't know where his daughter is. And he finds her in the middle of the aisle holding a lightsaber in, like, the classic Rey pose. And I was like, yes!
So this one made me emotional, which, like, I don't really appreciate it. The commercials make me emotional, but it did because I was just so happy for him. But also what I really liked about it is that he was, like, an original trilogy fan. Mm-hmm. And so when he's watching Star Wars, he's watching Empire Strikes Back. And then when he's at Toys R Us, he's looking at, like, Stormtrooper figures, I think, or, like, maybe some Darth Vader ones. And when he finds his daughter, she's holding Kylo's saber. So, like, she was brought into it by the sequel trilogy, which I like a lot.
I love it. I should also mention that my mom cries at commercials on the regular. And I've been known to tear up many a time. I just accept it now. It's just the way it is. So, yes. And then to transition to there's a Walmart commercial where it's a mom and her daughter, and the mom asks her daughter, like, why do, like, something about, like, why doesn't Rey wait to be saved? And the girl, like, rattles up the, like, whole long answer about female empowerment, and I was like, I was so there for that. And the mom just goes, yes, that's exactly right. And this was kind of a theme for some of these commercials where it's just like, they definitely were like featuring female characters. So moms, daughters, little girls, and like really leaning into the fact that like Rey as a female, the first female Jedi, was just like, I really appreciate that. Even if I recognize like they are totally just trying to market women and girls, but whatever.
I mean, I honestly don't think I even saw that commercial ever before.
No, I definitely haven't.
This either, but it does kind of make me happy retroactively to know that that was part of the marketing when The Force yes. Awakens came out. Although, I like, it didn't matter for me, but it probably did matter for little girls who were watching Star Wars for the first time. So again, while it was definitely to help sell products, like, I'm at least glad that that was part of the narrative around it.
Yes, exactly. And then I guess it transitions to a Star Wars mac and cheese thing, which I didn't have any comments on.
My one comment was, I want Star Wars mac and cheese.
Does sound really good. We occasionally do get Kraft macaroni and cheese.
I actually don't really like Kraft macaroni and cheese.
We get the shell, the fancy shell version.
Okay, that definitely is an improvement. I like Annie's mac and cheese. There are Annie's shells that are really good, but my husband prefers the normal version, which is sad.
Oh, that's interesting.
However, we also never have milk in our house, so we can never make mac and cheese.
We always have milk, and it always goes bad. That's just the way it is. Like, occasionally I'll buy it. I'm like, I'm going to make some cheese, because we do occasionally make cheese. And then, like, what ends up happening is, like, it's too long, and then I have to dump it. But I always have it in the house. I have to. All right. And then I can never say his last name. Is it Ken Jeong?
I think so.
Yeah. Ken Jeong is just like randomly in this like Star Wars Rogue One commercial featuring the Nissan Rogue, which I like Ken Jeong. Don't get me wrong. But like, there's also someone else who I think is like,
I think we're supposed to know who that woman is too, but I don't.
Yeah. Is she on like HGTV or something?
I don't know. I have no idea.
This commercial didn't work for me because I was just confused. So, yeah. That's my thoughts on that one. Then there's a commercial about this kid who has an Anakin, like, action figure that transitions to Darth Vader, which I'm just imagining a kid being that excited about this toy, and it's implausible to me. But I'm sure there are people who really like Anakin as a kid. So then his mom brings out lemonade, and these stormtroopers like crash through her arborvitae. I can never say that word either. And she offers them lemonade, and the kid's like, she's with us. She's with me or something. Didn't work for me.
No, and then
you had mentioned the Spanish language Duracell one. So this is originally in English. So they must have made a Spanish version, and that was the one that was, like, pulled into this compilation. This was something I saw many a time during football games. But it's really cute. Okay.
I had not seen the English version, so I was just like, oh, a Spanish version Star Wars commercial. Like, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a bunch of kids who are, like, going through, like, they're, like, grabbing an R2-D2 toy and, like, fighting off, I think there's like a battle where they're fighting off stormtroopers and like escaping, and basically they're like sneaking into a children's hospital to bring the R2-D2 toy to someone who's in the hospital, and it was adorable. Yeah, really like that one. And then I didn't have any comments on the McDonald's Angry Birds Halloween pails because I hated that commercial. I hated it. I was like, this is terrible.
Well, we've already talked about my Star Wars Angry Birds related story about the kid at Disney World who only knew Darth Vader from Angry Birds. I don't really know much about Star Wars Angry Birds, except apparently it's popular enough that they had McDonald's toys. But I did feel a strong connection to the Halloween pails. So they were Star Wars Angry Birds Halloween pails, like plastic pails from McDonald's. And I had McDonald's Halloween pails in the 90s, and I love them because, again, I feel like I went to McDonald's way too frequently as a child, and it was like a significant part of my childhood, so I was very happy to see the Halloween pails.
See, and I also had Halloween pails, but it was like the flashing, like the kind of like mix and match thing, and it wasn't enough to save that commercial for me. Also, it was like Boba Fett's and Angry Birds. Like
the original, or I don't know if they're the original ones, but like the 90s McDonald's Halloween pails are so cute. You should, like, I should put a picture on her website.
Yeah. I wonder if my mom still has those. She's been sending me things that I like wrote in the 1990s, and it's been interesting. I wrote this long story about like my dream pony, which is going to be called Mon Ami, and it was a palomino with flaxen mane, and I was going to muck out its stall, and then it was going to like wait for me after school and then neigh happily when I arrived. And then we would go for a long ride. And then I'd go for sleep and I would be riding the sky in my dreams. I told this to Darth Brooks and he was like, were you high?
That's intense. I never had an interest in horses like that. So.
Oh, I was totally a horse kid.
I was not a horse person.
Yeah. It was kind of, it ended abruptly because eventually my parents like saved up enough to send me to horse camp after eighth grade. And I was like by far the oldest kid there. Like I was older than the counselors.
Like it was all children that owned horses from like the age of five.
Yeah. Or I've been riding, like their parents had sent them to like camp for like years and years. And it didn't go particularly well. I was like very self-conscious. And like, I just remember one of the girls was just like very bratty to me. And we like at one point we were supposed to like relax and play around with hoses. And she's like, you just won't play the game, will you? And I'm just like staring at her.
I'm sorry, but this like sounds eight. Like, I don't even, this sounds like the Parent Trap. Like, yeah. The Lindsay Lohan trap. Like, that's just what I'm envisioning right now.
I should watch that again, because if it involves, like, a kid being really bratty to another kid, that was my experience. Although I did have, like, at least 4 to 6 years on this girl. Five? I was, like, 13. She was eight. Yeah. I was really into the crafts, too. I was a very slow-developing child. This was the year before I entered high school. The summer before. And then, like, I entered high school, and, like, I just remember, like, I had a picture on my... We had to take computer science freshman year. I had a picture of, like, me with my horse over camp on my binder. Because that was how I rolled. Yeah. I think this tells you a lot about me.
So around that time, I was writing a, like, teen romance novel about a vampire with my friend, who I'm still friends with now, who occasionally, at least I think, listens to this podcast. So shout out, you know who you are. And it could have been, like, if we had just published it before Twilight, we would be millionaires.
There you go.
That's all I have to say.
This actually is a great segue into Star Wars and the Muppets, because I was watching, when I first saw this episode, I was in college. So, we'll talk more about this, but yeah, so I think we can transition to Star Wars and the Muppets. We're going to talk about this episode of The Muppets holistically, but I will try to keep moderately on. I mean, we're not doing a great job of keeping on topic.
No, we're not doing a good job of keeping on topic.
It's a fun
at all.
Episode.
Yeah, it's a fun, light episode.
Yeah, exactly. Actually light, actually fun. all our episodes are fun. I shouldn't say it like that. So we'll just progress. So this starts up with the normal Muppet intro, which just was like so much nostalgia for me.
I love the Muppets show intro. I love that song. So I don't know why. Yes. I do remember watching the Muppet show on like Nick at Night or something when I was a kid, because it's very much like of my mom's era of when she was a teenager. And it's just so like, it's so 70s. It's so 70s.
This is so interesting because, like, it's one of those moments where I'm just like, yeah, my parents are quite a bit older, because, like, we've talked about my dad, like, skipping, rushing home after work in college to watch the Muppet show.
Right. So, like... Well, to be fair, like, I guess it did go into, like, early adulthood for my mom, because this episode was actually from 1980, so she was out of high school by that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And my dad would have been done with college. So, yeah, I guess I never, like, I remember watching maybe a few episodes, like, when I was younger. My main introduction to the Muppets was through the movies, specifically Muppet Treasure Island was a big one for me.
I honestly don't know if I ever watched that until I watched it with you.
Okay, I was like, how have I not made you watch this?
No, you definitely did make me watch it. I haven't seen... a lot of the other Muppet movies. I would say my actual introduction to the Muppets was Muppet Babies.
Yes. Yes.
And then the Muppet Show, and that was like the main source of my Muppet knowledge.
Yeah. So mine was definitely Muppet Treasure Island, but it was weird because like we also did the Muppet movie, the original one. My family and I watched that one a lot. We never really watched Muppet Christmas Carol. I actually just watched that.
Oh, now you bring that up. Okay. Yeah. I don't know how I could have forgotten Muppet Christmas Carol. I definitely saw Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
I love Muppet Christmas Carol. I used to watch it like every year as a kid. And we watched it this year on Christmas Eve, and it's so good.
Yeah. I don't think, like, watching it this last year, I don't think I've ever seen it all the way through. Or if it was, like, once, which is really odd because my family's very into the Christmas Carol as a rule. Like, the amount of times I've seen Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol is, like, I don't even know. It's got to be at least 20 times. So it's weird that, and they love the Muppets. So it's just weird that, like, I grew up without Muppet Christmas Carol, really, in my life. So
I do feel like I've only appreciated the Muppets more as I've gotten older, which is, I don't know if that's weird or not, but I feel like I think the Muppets are like hilarious now, which
yes.
I watched stuff with the Muppets as a kid, but I wasn't like thinking that it was outrageously funny, but now I do. And as we've discussed before too, like I've only been to Disney World as an adult, and they have a Muppet show, I guess you would say, Studios called Muppet Vision 3D, and it's been there since like 1990. Like, it's super old, but I didn't experience it until a few years ago, and like I love it. Like, I don't care, I've seen it multiple times, but I still like it.
We're going to that.
And it's probably gonna like go away at some point because it's so old, but no. I love going to Muppet Vision 3D.
Yeah, I really hope we go there before, like, we're able to get our Disney trip in and attend that show before it is gone, because that would be amazing to me. I should also note, since we're talking about theme parks, moving right along from the movie is a secret option for Rip Ride Rockets at Universal Studios. I did not get a chance to play it because we only went on that ride once, and I was, like, terrified. I was, like, scared I wasn't going to have enough time to, like, enter the secret options, so I just picked You Can't Touch This, and I was singing it legitimately throughout the entirety of that ride. I'm, like, from London to the Bay. Like,
I don't know that song, so I wouldn't be able to. I mean, I know of it, but, like, I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. I know all the lyrics. It actually messes me up when Super Freak comes on, because I'm just like, wait, this isn't You Can't Touch This? It's not. It's always disappointing. No offense, Rick James. So, yes. If you're going to Universal Studios anytime soon, I do believe it's 901 as a secret track number. It was also, like, very... when we were standing in line, I was getting progressively more freaked out. And it's not the younger kids. Like, obviously, kids don't have any concepts of danger. It was, like, the older adults, like, the people in the 50s, 60s, when they weren't terrified, that's when I started feeling bad that I was so scared. So I'm like, well, if these old people, they're not that old, I shouldn't say that. These older people are not scared, I probably shouldn't be either. And I will say, You Can't Touch This got me through that ride totally fine. All right, total digression. But this episode of The Muppets starts with the premise that Angus McGonagall, the Argyle Gargoyle, is going to be gargling Gershwin gorgeously as the guest of honor. And then he's just canceled because Mark Hamill appears as Luke Skywalker, C-3PO, and R2-D2 burst through a wall.
The Kool-Aid Man.
Yes, like Kool-Aid Man. Totally like Kool-Aid Man. And then I don't remember, like, if they say anything particularly memorable at that point, but then it transitions to, like, they're going to be the guests of honor. Yay! And then it opens with this random sheep song. Which is Rama Rama Lama Ding Dong,
which you were surprised was a song, and I know that song probably from listening to only one oldies radio station when I I was a child. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I just watched it quite happily.
Yeah. I thought they had modified the lyrics because that's, like, a thing as well. Like, I didn't know it was actually... I knew it was a song, but that is actually the name of the song. So, it was a shepherd, a shepherdess, and a sheep. And I'm just like, what does this have to do with Star Wars? It's just an odd, like, little interlude. And I also wrote that, whoa, the 70s were weird, but it actually aired, as we discussed in, or I mentioned, in 1980. And yeah, that's like 8 years before I was born.
Yeah, I was thinking that the Muppets were earlier in the 70s, but it was really like mid, late 70s into the early 80s, which surprised me for some reason.
Yeah. So this was the actual number of the episode was episode 17 in season 4. So yeah. And then I was thinking, what things do we watch today that we consider totally normal that someone is going to watch this many years later and think, whoa, that was super weird. So
I don't know why what immediately comes to mind is like reality TV, probably just because that's what
you're so right.
Which I get it. I understand, like, reality TV is very trashy. It's not even reality anymore. If it ever was, like, definitely is scripted. But when I'm stressed, like, all I want to do is watch reality TV. So I watch Real Housewives sometimes. I watch 90 Day Fiancé. Like, I feel like there's a good chance people would watch that in the future and be like, why are people
those are my questions now.
Couples fight and like middle-aged woman with a lot of Botox scream at each other.
Yeah. I don't watch reality TV because it stresses me out.
It does the opposite for me. All like of it. I watch All it and it. I'm just like, at least I'm not these people.
What is that, Schadenfreude? Well, at least that does answer my question, really, of, like, what people do watch today that is going to seem very weird in, like, 30 years' time. Reality TV.
Yeah. All right.
So, then next in the episode, C-3PO appears after the sheep song, and he talks to Kermit.
So, C-3PO is talking to Kermit, and, like, he just seems amazed by Kermit, and, like, says something like, you bring so much joy. I mean, I guess that's true for Kermit, but it just seems a little overboard.
Yeah. I wonder if Anthony Daniels was actually a Muppet fan. Or
I don't know.
Whoever wrote this episode. I mean, obviously, whoever wrote this episode was involved with Muppets. I'm just going to stop there. All right. And then it's revealed that the Star Wars people are here because they got a telegram from Chewbacca, the Wookiee, saying that he was being held captive by a bunch of turkeys.
To be more specific, by a bunch of weird turkeys.
Yeah, and Kermit just, like, accepts that. He's like, yeah, that does sound like our show. Fair. And then Mark Hamill appears as Luke and starts shouting. Like, he just, like, runs in. He's like, remember Alderaan, down with the Empire. He's, like, running around in these rooms, like, going upstairs, which I guess he's looking for Chewie. And he's there 100%. I love Mark Hamill. I mean, he's so into the show.
It's fantastic. Really is. Like, he is totally into it. He, like, makes the best faces over the course of this episode. Yes. Like, I already love Mark Hamill, but I feel like this made me love him even more, and it just made me want to, like, hang out with Mark Hamill. And he just was, like, such a good sport about all of it. It was very endearing.
Yeah, I know. I feel like he could teach me something about, like, embracing my inner weirdness and previous embarrassing moments. Like, there's just so much that he, like, just wholeheartedly embraces. It's fantastic. And then And this part, like, after he runs around, Luke refuses to appear on the show. Kermit asks him, and he's like, no. But he says that his cousin, Mark Hamill, is a possibility. And this is after Fozzie appears, and he's like, oh, Mark Hamill. Or I forget how that part of it goes. But there's, like, this weird back and forth between Luke and Fozzie, and then Mark Hamill appears.
I don't know why, but his quick change to become Mark Hamill was hilarious to me. Like, he went downstairs and then came back in, like, literally 1 second wearing, like, an Argyle sweater vest.
I like, know!
It's me, Mark Hamill!
I love the sweater vest so much. So much. And it is Argyle. You're right. I didn't even get that, like, double pun on the Argyle. So... Mark Hamill's trying to, like, say he could be on the show, and so he does, like, a song and dance number. Well, first he does a song, then he does a dance.
And he also does his dancing comedian act, which is just him dancing, like, extremely emphatically, and then, like, telling jokes, and then going back to just, like, throwing himself into dancing. It was very funny.
I enjoyed it. And then Kermit just tells him he's terrible, and he has to leave. And then it cuts to my favorite scene. And I could just, like, watch this clip over and over and over again. So, Mark Hamill exits. And then the stage is empty and Angus McGonagall appears. He's like, my chance at last. The stage is empty, my chance at last. And he starts gargling Gershwin. Specifically, Summertime from Porgy and Bess. Which is just, I love that song. And Mark Hamill sneaks back and starts, like, does this, like, shh signal. And then he, too, starts gargling Gershwin together. And he's got his hands, like, really weirdly placed. And I have a theory that's because, like, he's kind of simulating being a puppet. Could be, could not be, could just be him deciding that that's some hand motion he wants to make. But this is so good. And I say this all the time as well, in addition to quoting the Audi commercial. It's just like, my chance at last. Like, yeah, love it. Love it. I'm obsessed. So, yeah, it's great. And then, like, Kermit notices, he does this, like, slow head shake, and he's like, animal, sick him, and Animal comes off and, like, chases Mark Hamill and Angus McGonagall off the stage, and, like, Mark Hamill throws his head, not his head, his hands in the air, and just, like, and runs off the stage. Just so good. So, yeah, that's my favorite. And then there's this random fish number.
Yeah, again, I don't really know why that was thrown in the middle of Mark Hamill's segments, but I definitely knew that song, and it, like, unlocked a memory that I didn't know I had from, I think, kindergarten.
Huh.
Of listening to that song, singing it. I don't know. I also have this, like, very vivid memory of when we had a beach day in kindergarten, and we had, like a kiddie pool, like, filled with sand or something, and I, like, distinctly remember that we had hot dogs cut to look like
octopi. Oh, the octopus. Yes. Cephalopods.
So I feel like it probably was that day. I don't, like, I had not heard that song in, like, a very long time, but I'm pretty sure that's why I know it.
That's so interesting. It was unfamiliar to me. I was just like, I thought the baby fish were stupid for swimming over the dam. So I was judging those fish. And the shark appears and they, like, swim back to their mom, and I don't know. It's a song. And then the next transition point is we start act two, and it's Scooter. And I hate Scooter. I really hate Scooter. Like, I have an unreasonable dislike of Scooter. I don't know what it is, but I will have to mention that the NPR just did this, like, I think it's, like, a ruthless ranking of the 25 best Muppets, according to listeners. And Scooter, I want to say the person who wrote the description felt how I feel about Scooter. So I'm gonna quote this at length, and let me just see what number he ended up being. He beat out Elmo, Bert, Dr. Teeth, Count Von Count, who I also appreciate, And he hit number 21. And the person who wrote this description said, from this moment on, there's like something about like a shortstop. I don't watch baseball, so I'm just going to skip that. Let that line be renamed the Scooter Line, which separates the Great Muppets, your Ernies, your Sams the Eagle, your Snuffleupagi, from, well, Elmo. Note, this analogy falls apart when you scroll further up because Bert, Dr. Teeth, and the Count are all awesome, which they are. But yeah, how did Scooter come in at 21? Scooter, the guy who only got his job at the Muppet Theater because his uncle, J.P. Gross, owned the venue. The guy whose signature catchphrase involved the number of seconds before actual entertainment was to take place. Is it because Scooter's glasses double as his actual eyeballs? Is that how we're measuring quality these days? And that is how I feel about Scooter.
I have no strong feelings towards Scooter, but I do feel like he is probably one of the most boring Muppets because he's just like a person. He's not an interesting creature.
Yep. Agreed. I mean, he would probably be at the bottom of my list. So he's singing a song. It's like six string orchestra starting to play poorly, et cetera, et cetera. And then there appear these like spectral members of the Electric Mayhem, who are amazing as well. Dr. Teeth scored lower than Scooter. And so they kind of saved the number because obviously the Electric Mayhem are amazing. But then, thankfully, it transitions to Luke stealing the Swine Trek, which is the starship for pigs in space, which I love.
So, Pigs in Space is, like, a larger thing, right? Yes. Like, it's not just this episode.
Yes, exactly. I think they're riffing off of Space Ghost with the Pigs in Space, and obviously Star Trek as well. So,
Space Ghost.
Yeah. Space Ghost.
Like, actual Space Ghost?
Yeah, the original Space Ghost.
Okay.
Before Space Ghost did
All I know
coast.
Is Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there was original Space Ghost prior to him being Coast to Coast. I might be making that up.
I think so, because I think like all of those late night Cartoon Network things were like repurposed animation.
Yeah, that makes sense. I also made the best birthday I ever had for Darth Brooks was a space themed birthday, and I made a space cat cake and then modified the Space Ghost logo to read Space Cat. It was fantastic. It was basically our cat as a cake in an astronaut outfit. I've Love never it. Been so successful. All right. So for this particular segment, there's an ongoing joke about the tailor for Luke's outfit, which is like kind of weird because we don't talk about tailors much these days. Like, no one asks who your tailor is.
Yeah, I don't know why, I just felt like it made sense for like late 70s, early 80s. I don't know why I feel that way, but
I guess their clothes were like, pretty okay. tight.
That's true. Like, yeah, like men's clothes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You would probably want to get those tailored. And then, so he's talking to the captain of Swine Trek, and Miss Piggy appears, and I tried to, like, write down the sound she made. I obviously can't do Miss Piggy justice, but it's kind of like, it's Luke Skywalker, one of the heavenly bodies.
That kind of sounded like Yoda, which makes sense, because they're both Frank Oz, so I guess we can accept it.
I love Miss Piggy. Love Miss Piggy. So then she changes her outfit and she like, well, we'll see later. The pig captain is still having Luke like talking about his measurements, and like Luke's just standing there like taking notes about his measurements so he could pass them along to his tailor. And I was like, huh. Then Miss Piggy comes out in Leia's outfits and it's amazing.
She's also still wearing like the Miss Piggy purple gloves with it, which is also amazing.
I hadn't noticed that.
I really feel like I've gained a lot of appreciation for Miss Piggy. Like, I did not particularly like her.
What?
But I do now. Like, I love her. And my grandmother actually loved Miss Piggy. Like, she had Miss Piggy, like, merchandise. And I totally get it now.
Yeah. I had a Miss Piggy shirt in high school. I can just keep on talking about how embarrassing I was in high school. And I, like, wore it when I studied abroad. And I remember one time we were in Slovakia. And I, like, kept dropping my food, I guess. And I just remember one of the women who, like, an older woman who was traveling with us, like, pointing at my shirt and just, like, laughing hysterically because I was wearing a Miss Piggy shirt and just kept, like, dropping food. In hindsight, that's not charming. At the time, I thought it was pretty funny.
I'm gonna get a Miss Piggy shirt now.
Yeah.
She's now so, I don't like, care.
Yeah, exactly. I've moved on. No. I should embrace it, because then I maybe will stop feeling so embarrassed.
I think when you visit, we should just have matching Miss Piggy shirts and just travel around.
Own it. Which is what Miss Piggy would do, because she is just a force to be reckoned with. I loved it. So, like, she appears as the princess, and Luke's just like, she's like, I've been trapped to, like, Empire. And Luke's like, the Empire must feed its prisoners pretty well. And Miss Piggy's response is just like, the response I want to give all the time is just, what? I wish I had the ability to do that in all the situations where someone's like throwing shade at me and I'm like, yeah. What?
Have to admire her confidence.
I also like the fact, like, her confidence is backed by the threat of violence.
Yeah.
Just, like, immediately threatens that she will cut Luke in half, and he's just like, oh my god. I feel like this is kind of, you know, I appreciate the, like, escalation, the quick escalation, because this is something I struggle with, is just, like, I go from, like, 0 to 60. Like, oh, I'm fine. I will destroy you. So, I appreciate that. They find out that Darth Nadir is...
Which I can understand one of your points here, but yeah, Darth Nader.
Nader. It's spelled specifically D-E-A-R-T-H, meaning lack of, and Nader is spelled N-A. D-I-R, the lowest point. But I heard it as Darth Nader, and I thought they were mocking Ralph Nader. I was like, wow, this got political.
Was Ralph Nader around?
So I looked, and yes, he was. He was in politics for a very long time. So it is possible they could have been mocking him, but that doesn't sound like it was the intent. And it's Gonzo. He's just got, like...
I love Gonzo. Gonzo was, like, one of my favorites.
He is my favorite. I wrote an essay in high school about Gonzo being my favorite Muppet. Oh, God. This is so embarrassing. All right. Yeah,
I just wanted to mention, so they're on a planet at this point when Darth Nader shows up, and of course it's Gonzo, so he's just, like, tiny.
And with, like, a mask that has, like, his nose.
Yeah. And just all of, like, the set elements in this episode that are supposed to be space are just, like, so not Star Wars. Like, it just looks so jarring because... I just look at it and I'm just like, why is Luke here? Like, this doesn't make sense. It's just like the most generic, like, we're on Mars, but, like, no one knows what Mars looks like. So it's just random hills and, like, weird colors.
Oh, man.
I
noticed that.
I realized that Luke only had a blaster and not a lightsaber. And I started to question that. And then I was like, wait. This is the Muppet Show, so I'm sure they were not about to do special effects to let Luke have a lightsaber. Like, that makes sense now that I think about it.
Yeah, I also hadn't noticed that. I'm like, oh, right, that does make sense. But Darth Nader has a device that disables blasters, and then all seems lost until Chewie, the Wookiee, saunters up And he is just, like, sauntering.
Yeah, this is actually very funny to me because he's literally just, like, stepping over the aforementioned set pieces. So, like, it's things that are supposed to be background pieces that are supposed to be, like, mountains and stuff. He's just, like, stepping over them.
And so he's here to save the day, but then Angus McGonagall shows up and starts gargling Gershwin, and apparently Chewie hates this. And, like, just is, like, incapacitated by it. Which, I don't know why. Who doesn't like Gershwin?
So then they get into a song and dance number, which I had a note here, too, that this is very much, like, the same vibes as Hyperspace Hoopla, which was part of Star Wars Weekends. And to try and keep it brief, it was this show where Star Wars characters would, like, have dance battles.
Oh my gosh.
And it would be all, like, contemporary music to the times. So it would be, like, Kesha.
Yes, please.
And I never get to see it in person, which is, like, a big regret of mine, but I've watched a lot of it on YouTube, and it's, like, one of my favorite things. It just makes me so happy. But when Disney purchased Star Wars, they were like, we can't be doing this anymore. And this just, like, gave me a lot of the same feelings, which I appreciated.
Yes, which, I mean, logically goes to our next point, which is just, like, they're singing Lucky Star. C-3PO is tap Lucky dancing. Lucky Star?
The yeah. Madonna song?
No,
you... When you wish upon a star?
Oh. Yes. Yes. Was that what they were singing? I thought it was like, you are my lucky star. That song.
Is it a different song? At that point?
I don't know, like, the castle starts appearing, so it would make sense if
it is, because I know when I was, like, looking at the outline before I actually watched the episode, you had mentioned that there was foreshadowing of Disney's of Star Wars, and I was like, that's interesting, and then I was watching it, and C-3PO does a tap dance to When You Wish Upon a Star, and then, like, I don't even know what's happening. Like, Chewie and R2-D2 are just, like, spinning in circles next to him. And I realized that I actually have seen part of C-3PO's tap dance in a GIF before. What? And, like, never knew where it came from. I didn't know it was from this episode of The Muppet Show. And then it just, like, kept going. Yes. Then everyone started participating. They were all singing. Like you said, a castle, like, was lowered down. And I was just like, this is, like, more than I ever could have imagined when you said that it foreshadowed Disney's purchase of Star Wars. And the Muppets. Because Disney also owns the Muppets. They purchased the Muppets as well, like, before Star Wars.
Exactly. 1980. These people knew what was going to happen. Yes. Maybe it transitioned from Lucky Star to When You Wish Upon a Star. Because I definitely remember, like, you are my lucky.
Maybe.
Maybe. And then I could be just wrong.
Like, watching all of this happen, and he's just, like, disgusted. Yeah. He just, like, looks at them and just, like, throws his hands down and walks off. And I feel like that's very in character for Luke.
Yes. But then doesn't Mark Hamill appear and, like, start singing too? Yes. Yeah. Yes. Again, just giving it his all throughout this entire episode. So good. So good. So, yeah. I mean, what did you think of it overall?
I loved it. It was so ridiculous, good. But it was so enjoyable, and Mark Hamill is just fantastic, and yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like this, like, enhances my appreciation, as you said, of Mark Hamill, which was already pretty high. I mean, it was honestly, as soon as I learned he was the Joker from Batman, the animated series, I was like, yeah, you have my heart. You have my soul. Like, I would go to hell for you. So, yes.
It's very intense. I don't know if I would go that far, but I do appreciate Mark Hamill a lot.
You're right. Maybe I wouldn't. Oh, I don't know. Like,
which is, like, ironic because I really don't like Luke, but I love Mark Hamill.
Yeah, exactly. Luke is definitely, like, a low point All right. And we're going to stick with the Muppets slash puppets. I like, it's interesting because like I consider the Muppets to be like a very narrow segment, but like in this NPR ruthless ranking, and I think just in general, like Sesame Street and the Muppets like are just like a group because there's a lot of crossover.
I think that's like been debated, but I think the puppets on Sesame Street are technically considered to be Muppets because they're from the Jim Henson Workshop
studio. Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. So we're just going to keep on going, and we're going to talk about Star S'mores, which is something that I just found out recently because my coworker had mentioned it. He's like, oh, they have these Cookie Monster parodies. You should check them out. And this is totally just me like wanting to talk about these because Cookie Monster has changed over the years. Now he teaches kids about self-control. So like he always wants cookies. That has not changed. But he teaches kids to deal with their wants and desires in a reasonable manner. And so this is a parody of Star Wars starring Cookie Monster. And it's amazing. I feel like these parodies are just like exactly what I needed because I really struggle with self-control sometimes and task persistence and self-talk. So like, apparently I'm just like a 4-year-old. So I was like adopting some of these things this week where I was like, we'll talk about it, the strategies. So this one, like there's a range of these parodies. Some of them are better than others. And this is one of the better ones. And all of them feature like very strongly baking puns. So Leia is depicted as having like Oreos for buns. She's being threatened by a mixer droid.
Hilarious.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, these are definitely for adults. Like, kids are not going to understand half these references. Luke's name is Luke Piewalker. Flan Solo. Chewie the Cookie.
This was so funny to me. So, like, they're in, I don't know what they call it, but, like, the Millennium Falcon. But and they're like, okay, we're ready to go. Like, here's your co-pilot. And Chewie the Cookie. Or like I think they say like, oh, you're co-pilot Chewie, and then like he comes in and he's a cookie, and they're like, yeah, Chewie the Cookie, and Cookie Monster just goes, what?
The cookie's wearing the like bandolier that Chewie wears, and he goes, so good.
I can't even express like how hilarious I found this. Like, I understand that there's a lesson behind it and it's teaching self-control that like Cookie Monster can't eat the cookie, but like the cookie is his co-pilot, and the whole like skit is just about various situations where he just like remembers that he's a cookie and just starts eating.
Yeah, I know, he's just like, but cookie. Like, he's not chewy, he's kind of crunchy. Yeah, I also was just like deeply entertained by this. There's also only one cannoli.
I had to mention like the music is like spot on in that segment. Like, it's not the Star Wars music, but it's so evocative of the music on Tatooine in A New Hope. And then I felt like I was like a screaming fan for a Muppet, but in the background of the scene with only one cannoli, there was, I guess it was supposed to be like the Bantha, but it was Snuffleupagus, and I was like, oh my god, Snuffleupagus. I love Snuffleupagus.
I didn't even notice that. Like, so yeah, that makes sense. Oh my gosh. Oh. And then instead of Darth Vader, it's Darth Baker. He goes, I find your lack of control disturbing. Like, I feel like the voices were also like a strong part of this. Like, I especially was speaking of Luke, the actor playing Luke Piewalker just had like that like very whiny tone that Luke has. And it's just like, why not? He needs to learn another strategy.
Grover also showed up. I was very excited about that because like Grover probably was like my number one Muppet as a child, which I realize is a weird choice.
No,
and I know my parents have said like they could not find Grover things. yes. for me, but I loved Grover.
Yeah, I was just like, oh my gosh. Like, I couldn't remember his name. I had to look it up. I felt really bad. Because, like, I remember really liking him as a kid, which tells you I did watch Sesame Street. And so the three control strategies are used, like, they start off with, do they visit Yoda? No, they visit only one cannoli first, which yes. is A New Hope. And he's like, use the four. They're like, what? Use the four. Basically, it's just like when you want it, when you want something or like you're feeling overwhelmed, you count. You got 1, 2, 3, 4, and then like, oh, I do feel better. And then Cookie Monster tries to eat Chewie again. And so they go to, where do they go? Dagobah.
Yes.
And there they encounter Grota, who's Grover. And he says, there is no try, there's only sing. I am just a sucker for these puns or like these like modifications. I love them. And so basically then he like saunters off and just starts singing, and he teaches Cookie Monster that like, again, if you're trying to distract yourself, sing a song instead of thinking about like the cookie you want to eat. And then the final one is they go to the Death Star, I guess. Is that the Death Star? They basically yeah. encounter Darth Baker. And he says, stop and pretend the cookie is something else. So Cookie Monster pretends that Chewie is his grandma. Which you had actually written down the quote, so I'm going to have you read that off.
All right. I'm not going to do a good Cookie Monster impression. He would never eat me, Granny. Yes.
That's pretty spot on. Yes. And then, yeah, it recaps, I think, and that's the end of the parody. But I, yeah, you should say what... this led you to
I was watching all these videos on YouTube, and one of the suggested videos after I watched this one was a Sesame Street Hunger Games parody.
Yes.
Which I did not watch, but I definitely have to.
You should. That's another really good one. I really enjoyed that one. It's just like, may the may the cookies be ever in your flavor. Like, and that's what it, that one definitely was just like, this is not like, kids are going to miss all these references because you're not going to let your 4-year-old watch The Hunger Games, but it is endlessly entertaining for adults.
And then also probably just because I watch Disney World related YouTube videos very frequently, I also like automatically after this video had an Incredibles themed Disney World ad about temperature checks played that was like not about Disney World, like it was just like, when you come to Disney World, like, we gotta check your temperature, but, like, in, like, an on-brand way. I don't know why.
That's very interesting. I like the idea of, like, having that be Incredibles themed, because I do love the Incredibles. All right. And it just continues. Now we're gonna talk about C-3PO's and R2-D2's appearances on Sesame Street, which... I had definitely never seen it as a child. Did not know this happened. Either.
It's definitely downhill from this point as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It gets weird. So they're in two episodes, both of which aired in the 1980s, specifically 1980. It's episode 1364 and 1396. And they also like must have done some like filming around that same time, because some a few songs and stuff were like thrown into later episodes as inserts. So, it was hard to find, like, a full video of these, so I was just kind of watching clips, and there's definitely, like, a lot of, unlike the Muppet episode, we're not going to deal with this one holistically, because I did not watch the whole thing. No.
No, you had shared a link that was just, like, raw footage, and I was just like, oh my god, I cannot.
Yep, exactly. I was, like, skipping around. And so, the first clip that I found... from the first episode, 1364, was basically the droids arrive on Sesame Street, and C-3PO, like, my first comment is C-3PO is captivated by a tree,
Yeah, so they show up in the Sesame Street neighborhood, and they're, like, met by these two adult humans that, you know, are, like, the adults that are always on Sesame Street. And he's just, like, staring at this tree, and the man comes over, and he's just like, oh, that's a tree. And C-3PO is just like, really?
Yeah!
And he's just like, yep. And, like, that's as far as it goes.
Yeah.
Like, he's not like, here's what a tree is. Like, it's not an educational moment. It's just like, yeah, it's a tree.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, why are they here? What is the purpose of this? Like, it was just like very awkward moments. Like, just like non sequiturs.
Awkward. Like, every interaction is so awkward. The woman offers the droids some coffee or a ham sandwich at one point. Like, then the rest of the segment is them, like, asking what they need if they don't need coffee and a ham sandwich, and then they go and get some oil and are, like, oiling the droids, which, like, is that even a thing? Like, they're acting like C-3PO is, like, the Tin Man.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
Yeah. And I know, like, the droids, like, in the things we've read and stuff, they've mentioned, like, having their joints lubricated and stuff, but I don't think that's that process.
No, that's not like pouring oil into like random parts of the droid.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's another clip that I couldn't find online, which is talking about like droids and feelings. But the next clip is Blind Man's Bluff. And so Big Bird puts on a blindfold and is trying to find the droids. And so he like runs into, I think it's, is it a fire hydrant or mailbox? Mailbox, I think. And, like, he's like, oh, it's you, R2-D2, and it's not. And then he, like, touches a pole, and he's like, oh, it's C-3PO, it's not. And then eventually he finds R2-D2, and apparently in the synopsis for this, it's like, an exhausted Big Bird says, anyone want to play hopscotch? And I'm just like, again, what is this? Why? So, yeah, I ended that episode and just, like, it felt like I was in a very weird place. Like, I was, like, watching all these, like, Muppet clips. I was halfway convinced that I was going to, like, encounter a Muppet in real life. Because, like, I'd just been watching so much. But, yeah. And then the next episode, they appear, C-3PO and R2-D2 appear for an alphabet song.
Yeah, this is the one that makes the least sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, it's a bunch of kids with, again, like, the Sesame Street adult. And he's teaching them the alphabet song, or I guess, like, having them sing the alphabet song. And, like, literally, like, R2-D2 and C-3PO just watch them. And, like, that's it.
Yeah.
They don't really have any interaction with anyone. Like, again, it's not a teaching moment where they're like, what is the, like, the human alphabet? Like, there's none of that. They're just standing there.
Yeah, exactly. It was odd. And then R2-D2 falls in love with a fire hydrant, which is, like, this whole, like, back and forth between him and C-3PO, where he's like, I found someone, like, R2-D2 beeping, and C-3PO is like, well, what is she like? I want to meet her, and eventually R2-D2 leads him to a fire hydrant, and it was really depressing.
And, like, again, it's just so awkward and bizarre, like, he leads him there, and, like, C-3PO is just like, R2, that's a fire hydrant, like,
yeah, I'm like, what are you trying to teach kids? Like, what is the purpose of these segments? Like, I guess maybe I'm taking things to, like, everything must have an educational purpose, but this is just odd. And then there are two other inserts of things that, like, appeared in different episodes. One of them is a number song, which is I don't know what this is supposed to be. Like, it's just like, how do you count? Like, one, I remember by ba ba ba. Two, I remember by dee dee dee. Like, it's just, it's, I guess it's teaching kids how to count. Maybe.
It reminds me of William Shatner in The Delivery. It's not good.
Oh boy. Yeah.
And then the final one was my favorite slash.
Me too.
The probably the most bizarre. It's Big Bird like bringing a banana over to R2-D2, and he's like, R2-D2, this is called a banana. It's a banana. And he just, like, keeps repeating, like, this is a banana. And R2-D2 is, like, beeping. He's like, no, it's not called that. It's a banana. Like, just over and over again. No, it's called a banana. And I'm just like, what is happening? And then he starts singing a song about how he and R2-D2 can still be friends, even though he, like, doesn't know what a banana is.
So I feel like this was very reminiscent of, like, interactions I experienced as a kid where someone was just like, that shrill tone of voice where it's just like, it's called a banana. It's called a banana. Like, I feel like I had my fair share of, like, just, I guess, playground squabbles where someone was just like, no, it's this. And I mean, honestly, it could have been me. Maybe I was the kid screaming, it's called a banana. It felt very familiar. So I was entertained by that one. And then I did appreciate the message of this one, right? Where you can be friends with someone even though they're different and don't call a banana a banana. So. And that is it for the Sesame Street episodes.
Yeah. That's it for our wide-ranging discussion of Muppets and Star Wars and also
commercials,
random things from our childhood and high school that came up based on those commercials. Our intro and outro music is by Lobo Loco, and our segment break music is by Poddington Bear. You can find us, as always, at StarWarsSleepover.com, and I feel like, especially with this episode, you should definitely check it out, because we're going to have links to all of these videos, and, like, if nothing else, please watch the Sesame Street ones because they're insane. That's all I have to say. We're also on Twitter at SW Sleepover and on Instagram at Star Wars Sleepover. And we are definitely most active on Instagram. So check us out there. Please do consider subscribing, rating, and reviewing on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts if you like our show, because it does help us out. And please also tell a friend if you like us. We would love feedback from our listeners about upcoming topics that you'd like to see as we plan out our future episodes as well. We'll be back in 2 weeks to discuss, from a certain point of view, The Empire Strikes Back. Thanks for listening.
And may the Force be with you.